Back in the saddle again. Behind the Beard, WNC returns for the next iteration. And the saga as the journey continues. And it's cold outside, gentlemen. Mike Anderson decided to drag us over to the Irwin Warriors football game on Friday night. And it was, what, 2 degrees? Is that how cold it was out there? I thought it was pretty freaking cold. Carson came.
I was in shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
you were.
Yeah.
You forgot your chair. You forgot gloves, hat, and you stood the entire time, you and Luke and everybody. So, of course, that meant since I was behind you that I had to stand the entire time, even though I had a blanket in
it. It was warmer that way.
Yeah. Are you always behind Mike?
No. I try to avoid that.
We were all there, I think. Except Derek. He didn't come.
I was down the mountain. I watched a little football down in South Carolina. But it was cold down there too.
Boy, cold. Well, I can assure Derek, he did not miss much.
Tough game.
No, I think
fantastic season for the Irwin Warriors though. But what a tough matchup. I think everybody expected that to be a very difficult matchup for
him. Our pal Chris says around here good, boys, that was around here good.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Irwin beat everybody around here. Well, Charlotte made them look silly, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Great year.
It was remarkable of how Irwin looked. I mean, they looked like teams that like Irwin played in the MAC. Like they looked like a North Buncombe or they looked like those types of teams. And I think Mike mentioned the attendance and whatnot. It's like when you combine Reynolds and Irwin, and that's the size of it. Not to mention that West Charlotte. I mean, the athletes were all over the field,
everywhere.
Very, very, very athletic.
And, the cold weather certainly played a factor, I think, in that. And, in general, I think the cold weather played a factor in all football all weekend. It got everybody just a little bit salty. Did you guys watch that Michigan-Ohio State game where they tried to plant the flag at the center?
Well, there were three of those. Also, State Carolina.
Indeed.
Yep. And Florida State.
Yep.
Yeah. Listen. Don't plant a flag. It's not going to end well for anybody.
Hey, it's rivalry week, right?
That's as a Carolina fan, my thing's like, just play better. I mean, if you beat them, it seemed to me that every visiting team won this weekend. Mm. And it's like, I mean, that's part of the rivalry. Baker Mayfield did this how many years ago?
Like 3 or 4 years. Well, no. I mean,
was it Baker or was it Manziel?
Baker. Johnny, I'm sure, would have. Johnny Football probably would have done something like this as well. But it's just one of those things. These kids are passionate about it. And I think with the Ohio State, what stood out to me was like, those kids, like maybe if they would have shown that much fight during the game, they might not have lost.
Michigan as not even that good.
21-point favorites. I mean, Ryan Day.
Owen four
against them. There's a clip of him just staring off into space, and everybody's mayhem's happening about the flag. And he goes, "What happened?" You can see it. He says, "What happened?" It's like it looks like he is talking about the game. But he was seeing ghosts, and I think he was seeing his last days at Ohio State.
So let's go around the table real quick. Is it okay to plant a flag in your rival's stadium, Lewis?
Absolutely. I mean, you just won the game. It is your rival. We're going to do this.
Derek?
I hate it. I think it's a lack of respect for your opponent. I mean, I understand, if Auburn planted their flag in the middle of Alabama's logo, do I think we should go fight them? No, I don't.
But I
hate it. It's act like you've been there. Show a little bit of pride, a little bit of class, and I hate it personally.
Carson, I'm gonna say I'm here for it, but I also accept the retaliation part of it. Like I'm not saying
okay that it just leads to a fight because that's what happens.
Yeah, that probably sounds like we should probably stay away from it.
Hold on a minute.
But is anyone talking about how great these games were? No, we're talking about the fight, right?
Right.
So obviously it adds something to the rivalry week.
You say that again. What kind of week?
Rivalry week.
Well done.
Hooked on phonics.
I don't know. You don't want to see anybody get hurt in a meaningless post game fight. But I do. I don't know. I just why can't the teams just come together and then not actually throw punches and
just push and shove?
But back to Lewis's point, everybody's talking about a fight. and not talking about football.
Yeah.
You know, right. I mean, these are phenomenal football games that are being played, and it's taken away from the whole reason that they're out there to begin with.
Well, except the Florida State game. Well, I mean, Florida's
who watched that anyway? So,
that right?
As a North Carolina.
What are you trying to say there?
As a North Carolina fan, I'm glad we're not talking about the actual football game. So, but I definitely know Pat, who, along with my father, would probably be like, no, all these kids should get kicked out of school. This is so bad.
So I am very opposed to this. This is a level of dumbassery on the level that the Chambers versus ACR playoff game was 2 years ago. That's how kind of fired up that got me, that idea of planting your flag on your opponent's field. It's in that level.
So can we all make a flag and go to Pat's house and plant it in his grass?
Absolutely not. No. No.
Listen, here's the fact. Your rival gets to plant his flag unless you beat him.
Yeah, you got to win.
You got to win.
That's still their house. That's still their
not once you win, it's your house.
I don't know if that's Ohio State's house anymore. Oh. I don't know if that is. I just don't.
But I also know Lewis says it's okay to plant your flag. But if he was on the losing side, he'd be in row one, ready to fight.
Right in the front, pugilistic stance, up and going.
Absolutely, I would be. And that's what adds to this.
You know what I did love about the whole... Did y'all watch the whole replay of the clip of the Ohio State-Michigan game?
Oh, yeah. I saw the pepper spray.
They come in, that is wild. The fight starts when the flag goes out, right? And then they're having their battle. And then it kind of cools off a little bit. The flag's back over there behind the Michigan players. And another guy from Michigan grabs it, comes back all the way around. He comes back in and plants it again. Yeah. Then the big fight happens. The pepper spray comes out, all that, right? Well, then you notice finally they rip the flag out and they throw it off to the side. And then slowly but surely you see Michigan starting to gravitate toward to that sideline. And it looked like maybe it was going to flare up again. Well, I don't know if you know, I don't think they intended to do this, but they put the camera on an Ohio State player that was coming back and he was putting on his helmet, buckling up the chin strap. We're going at it. I was like, oh, it's on.
Yeah, don't get in a fight in a football game without your helmet on.
Yeah, you got to keep that thing on. Got to keep the helmet on. The helmet has to be on and strapped up.
Yeah, you don't want to be swinging it like the guy from, was it the Steelers that was swinging his helmet? Oh, yeah. No, it was the Browns.
Yeah, it was Browns guy on the Steelers quarterback. Yes. The guy that's dating Lainey Wilson now. What's his name?
Mason Rudolph?
It was Mason Rudolph. Not the Duck guy, but yeah, Mason Rudolph. That's right.
You know what else we got to talk about? Is the Bears.
Yes.
And their time management.
Oh,
Carson, you want to talk about it?
Yeah, one of the greatest days in Chicago Bears history. The future has never been brighter. We are one hire away from the next dynasty in the NFL.
Ever since they fired Lovie Smith, who was 20 over 500, by the way, they have been below 500 with all four of the coaches. John Fox.
They have an owner and a family that knows nothing about football. They hired someone to be over operations of football that knows nothing about football. That has stemmed a lot of these issues. But this, they've never fired a season. They've never fired a coach in season in 105 years of the history. This is the first one.
When they had Mike Ditka, they didn't have anybody to fire.
Yeah, yeah. But it just goes back to, I hope, to tie this back into Western North Carolina football, I hope they give Ben Johnson a blank check and they say, we know that we are a absolute cluster of an organization. Please come and fix us.
That's 75% of the teams in the league. They all want Ben Johnson.
Yeah. Correct. And he eventually, unless Dan Campbell has something on him.
He's got like a secret on him that he doesn't want to get out. That's why he's staying there.
I don't know. I at some point, he's going to leave. I don't know what the job would be. At first, I thought, maybe Andy Reid's going to retire soon and he wants to go coach Mahomes for the next 10 years. But I don't know. I don't know who they're going to get. There should be a lot of interest because this next coach should have a good roster, all the support. We'll see.
Do you think your current quarterback is as good as your last quarterback?
I mean, it's not even close. He's definitely a good quarterback.
Okay.
I mean, he just broke the record for most completions without an interception
As a rookie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not bad. He definitely, I mean, if you watch games, he is not, everybody's just all out on him. And it's like, if you look and see how they were calling plays the first six games of the year, play calling is, when you have your number one receiver that hates your offensive coordinator so much that he literally just walks off the field in the middle of the play, it's like, you've got to figure out a way to get you can't win that way. It's not a way for a rookie quarterback to succeed. So I don't know. I hear rumors about Cliff Kingsbury because of his ties with Caleb Williams, and obviously with what he's done with the Washington Commanders. I mean, their offense is awesome. So that would be exciting.
Yeah, they look good today.
They did look good today.
He was the coach at Arizona, right?
USC.
He coached the Arizona Cardinals before
yes,
USC.
Yes, he was. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, the whole debate is, you know, do you go after – you've got a list of offensive coaches, you got a list of defensive coaches. I, for one, I want the head guy to be an offensive-minded coach because I don't want the turnover with a young quarterback like Caleb Williams. If you've got a guy that's – you know, if you got a guy like Brady, if you've got a older veteran that's more of a leader, that's proven himself, all this stuff, I think you can go with the Vabrels or the, you know, Bill Belichick's or a defensive-minded coach. But I don't know, Derek, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think the trend in the NFL now is to hire an offensive guy, and they're going out and they're poaching these good offensive coordinators. Whereas if you have an offensive guy as your head coach, that offense is the continuity that stays with that quarterback. I mean, you look at Justin Fields. I mean, the dude had how many offensive coordinators in his time there?
Yeah.
You know, you look at, you know, back in the college ranks, I know specifically at Alabama, Milroe and Bryce Young, they didn't have the same offensive coordinator 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And but the one constant was Nick Saban. So, I mean, and obviously Nick Saban's a defensive guy, but I just think the continuity of having an offensive guy as your head guy is far more beneficial than a defensive guy.
Yeah, I agree with
you. In today's NFL.
But great offensive coordinators don't always make great head coaches.
No, they don't.
No.
Look at Miami.
A good play caller.
Fantastic play caller.
Fantastic.
Great offensive guy, but
just
as a head coach, we're missing something.
Yeah, and, you know, we kind of, or at least I touched on it with the Christ School coach, Coach Walker. You know, calling plays as a head coach, it's got to be one of the most complex things to be able to manage a team, manage a game, and then be responsible for 50% of the play calls on a Sunday, Friday, Saturday, whenever your games are. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of stress and a load that not many people could handle.
Norv Turner is another example of a good offensive coordinator.
Yeah,
and not
the old Chargers guy.
Norv Turner, that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
That's because I'm old, Mike. So.
That's true.
Hey, and I'm keeping with the cold theme. Did you guys tell me that the game tonight is going to be played in 38 feet of snow and they're paying people to shovel snow?
Lewis was telling us that.
I think it's 18 inches of snow, but yeah.
And that's at Buffalo. Then the Bay Area boys are coming over there to play in that mess.
Indeed.
Agony. That would so not be fun.
Is Purdy playing tonight?
He is.
Okay, good.
That's pretty cool.
But Bosa's still out, so.
Well, that's okay. I just need him to throw the ball to Juwan Jennings, please.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you guys saw this. The Mountain 7 gave out their superlatives this past week.
I got a couple notifications about that.
Yeah. So, I don't know if anybody noticed, but.
Super exciting.
They had two coaches of the year. No one's claiming co-coach. I could get no answer from anybody. Pisgah's Ricky Brindley and Smoky Mountain's JT Postel, both coach of the year.
Hey, all right. That's congrats.
Good. What I don't like is, where's the love for the West coach? I mean, if we're just handing them out, why doesn't the West coach get in there?
Well, he's expected to win.
Okay.
Wow. He's That's why Shane Laws doesn't win it every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, what a tradition that is that he's built over there. Because I don't think we would have expected Wes Henderson to win every year in football a few years ago.
Yeah, but they've had a nice run.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah, they've definitely had a nice run. I'm just saying he should get some credit.
Yes.
If two other coaches are getting coach of the year, hell, why doesn't Wes post that he's coach of the year?
And they're your boys.
So all three of those.
They're one of my boys.
Wes, Smoky Mountain, Pisgah, three-way tie, of course. They went RPI. Wes Henderson gets the conference championship.
Yep.
So,
interesting.
Third got coach of the year.
Who do y'all side with for coach of the year?
It's Smoky Mountain.
That's what I
Smoky
think
Mountain.
As well.
Yeah. I don't think it's close.
Yeah. I don't think any of us expected Smoky Mountain. The second half in the conference run they had, they lost to Pisgah and won every game in the conference from there on out, including playing Pisgah in the playoffs where they won as well.
Yeah, yep. And they won in the playoffs. Smoky, we talked about them last year. We called them a sticky.
Gritty.
They were gritty. They were just. They always muddied up every game. And this year, they just really took that, and the second half of the season was great. I thought that with Irwin, I truly thought Smokey was live for that game on the field, and Irwin took care of business and whatnot, but that's how much Smoky Mountain took off that second half, where I was like, oh, I think they actually have a chance to win the game against Irwin, especially in the cold conditions. But
Derek, do they vote for Coach of the Year before the playoffs start? Do you know?
I think it's before the playoffs. Typically, it's the Saturday, or at least in the MAC, it was the Saturday after the final week of the regular season. Everybody got together. They voted on all conference, did the whole
But they probably don't announce it until the last conference team is done in the playoffs. So this week, correct. We should hear the MAC stuff.
Should hear the official things for the MAC, yes.
That's what's tough about in baseball is you got to wait for Robertson to win the state championship. Yeah, it's like then graduation's already happened.
You don't have to worry about it this year. So
that is true.
How about Coach of the Year in the MAC? I mean, it's got to be Rodney Pruitt, right?
It
has to be.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I do think, and this is not just because they're my boys, but I do think Asheville, they turned the corner. I think they had some good stuff happen this year, but you can't argue with what Irwin did.
4A conference champs.
Yeah.
So I'm with you.
Coach Radford should get a vote or two. I think, should we call you Coach think Radford play? And Pruitt and just get them to play next
just
Friday?
Like Asheville School Christ, you think they'll play this together. Week? Let's, call them, see if they're willing to play.
Call them up.
I bet the coaches would.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
We don't even have to. We'll officiate it, so they don't have to hire officials.
We got five guys. That's
five
all you
guys,
need.
We'll be the officials. We got it.
Pat's just as blind as any ref.
That's right.
Indeed, that's true.
He's had eye surgery.
I have. I had to get the cataracts.
I want Pat over the middle, the one that's on defense.
The guy right in the guy right in the way of everything. Yeah, that's Pat.
I'd be awesome at that.
I want Pat right in the middle linebacker.
Derek will be our white hat, of course.
For sure.
Oh, no. Throw me in the back. I'll be the back judge.
You'll be the back judge?
I'll be running around.
So that would make Lewis the white hat?
Yeah. You obviously have to be on Irwin's side, be the sideline judge with Coach
and
Pruitt.
And you'll be on Coach Radford's side.
And I'll be on the actual sideline.
Perfect.
Yeah. We'll be going to bat for our teams.
Yes. Oh, man. So, big signing this week. Reidsville five-star tight end, Keandre Harrison. He's going to Oregon.
Yeah.
Not a lot of North Carolina kids going to Oregon.
No.
No. I think that was surprising, too. There was a lot of...
Where did you think he was going?
Every school in the country was in there, but it's, you know, you don't...
Do you think he was going to Carolina? Is that what you thought?
The only hope for Carolina was to play both, basketball and football.
Mm.
And so...
what was the kid who did that back in the day?
Julius Peppers. Yeah.
Are you even old enough to have seen him play?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Julius Peppers.
Were you like five?
He actually played for the Chicago Bears. Fun fact.
He did.
Yeah.
That's true. So, he was a fantastic basketball and football player.
Yeah, but I mean, any time that you see Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, I mean, all those, it's like I still get surprised when when a guy picks Oregon over them. Even though Oregon is, I mean, obviously number one in the country and whatnot. I wonder if do you think that has to do with just their offensive profile and that?
I don't know. I would think, the Southeastern Conference.
Don't you think
has the pedigree to land a guy like that?
Yeah, that's my thought.
Of course, Derek thinks that.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll see what happens. What Brock Bowers is doing in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to Georgia, the tight end factory, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
look, and their offense does not look the same when they don't have a first round tight end.
No, but now the one that they got down there now is really good. The Delp kid, he's fantastic.
They're
but
starting
he's not,
to feed him the ball. Yeah, is he young?
I think so. I want to say he's a sophomore, but I may be wrong. But he's good.
Is it Carson Delp? What's his name?
Oscar Delp.
Oscar, yeah. Carson, same thing.
Close. He's a winner.
Yeah.
So are you, Carson.
Thank you, Pat.
So, Oscar, did you see that 7 double-digit seeds advanced this week, as well as number 30, J.H. Rose?
What a run they're on.
A 30 seed.
Wow.
I mean, that's impressive.
Cinderella story?
I saw that all the games that they lost this year, those teams are still in the playoffs.
Okay. So they're well conditioned for this.
They've played some good teams.
Yeah. They're a traditional power down east. They're usually really, really good. So no surprise to see them still playing.
What was their record going into the playoffs?
3-8.
Oh my god! That shows you how strong their RPI was.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. 3-8.
Their strength of schedule had to have been through the roof.
Or maybe been 3-7.
Are they 3-7? Are they 4A, Derek?
3A.
3A. They're of course in the.
I think they're
in the east.
Yeah.
You think they're 4A?
I don't.
They're one or the other, or they're 2A or 1A. It's one of the four.
There you go. Get them all out there.
We're fact checking.
Derek's going to find out. They might be. They're 3A. Wes Henderson beat them in the state championship for baseball.
That's right. Yeah. They are 3A. They play the 2 seed, 71st, out of Fayetteville on Friday night.
Reynolds had a coach that coached at Fayetteville 71st.
That's right. The Bobby legendary Poss. Bobby Poss.
Yeah. Way back in the day. So
you have the shootout between Crest and Hickory, too. That,
oof, we're going to get to that.
We are. Okay, good.
No guns, I hope. Just solely football?
Yeah, I think it was just solely football.
Okay. The only guns were behind center. Yeah. Brady Stover.
Yeah, Brady Stover and Eli Hemrick.
Slinging six shooters.
So, Pat, leading us into our five games, let's talk about them, boys. Our first game, Robbinsville at Murphy.
Indeed.
At halftime, this game was 13-6 Robbinsville, and I was feeling real good about my pick. Mm. Unfortunately, Murphy ends up winning 34-21. Murphy scored 21 third-quarter points, and they were led by Cam Clem, 19 carries, 239 yards, and a touchdown.
Obviously made quite a few good adjustments at halftime to get by Robbinsville there.
Yeah, Murphy, 11.5-point favorite. They, of course, won by more than 11.5. Lewis, you know who the only person who got this one right was?
Who's that?
That'd be Pat.
Indeed.
Good job, Pat.
Yeah.
We all thought Robbinsville was going to keep it close.
Lewis had me convinced. And
I know. We were never like, Lewis Robinsville.
I just don't think they're very good.
They had a rough year.
Once Lewis hopped onto the bandwagon, it never actually goes well.
I've been fans for like 10 years, but go ahead.
The 2024 football season is not Lewis's bright spot. Forget about this one.
Y'all made fun of me like attaching my fandom. It's like, Lewis may be the cursed one.
Robertson?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was Asheville.
And Robbinsville. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The 49ers are bad. Florida State's terrible.
I'll never forget. It was the first year we were doing this. I mean, Lewis had me convinced Owen was winning 8 or 9 games.
Yes, last year. We were like,
I was like,
they're probably going 9 or 10.
He texts us every day. It's like, these boys, I mean, they're so fired up. Practice is going so strong. I was like,
how many did they win that year?
They won two.
Two.
They did beat Madison, though.
We were convinced they were going 9-1. It didn't happen.
You know.
Oh, well. So next up, East Wilkes at Mount Heritage. Mount Heritage, a 32.5-point favorite. Well, Mount Heritage wins the game 38-14. East Wilkes covers. In the playoffs, Mount Heritage guys, they're scoring almost 50 a game while giving up 9. That's just the playoffs. They were led by quarterback Brandon Quinn. He had 19 carries for 186 yards, 5 touchdowns. Pat.
That's impressive. A lot.
So the people got this one right. Carson, Mike, Derek.
Yeah.
That's just a lot of points.
It is, and especially in a third-round playoff game.
Third-round playoff game, it's a lot of points.
What if I give you 30 points this week? Will you take the underdog?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay, well, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Time will tell.
Our third game. This was a interesting game. East Rutherford, they beat Reidsville, the overall number one seed in the entire world of North Carolina, in 2A football last week.
The overwhelming favorite to win the
Yes, state everybody thought, you know, we just talked about Keandre Harris.
Yeah.
In 2A, you think a 5-star makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
And I'd say he probably does make a huge difference.
Yeah. Well, Brevard wins 42-6 over East Rutherford.
Wow.
Yes. It was 7-6 at halftime, East Rutherford. They were led by their quarterback, Landon Flynn, 15 of 26 for 144 and a TD. Brayne Pinkerton, 18 carries for 77 yards. He also had 6 catches for 76 yards. For Brevard, Kessinger, 4 of 9 for 57, while Braylon Thompson, he had 10 carries for 106 yards and a touchdown. They had 245, Brevard this is, had 245 yards rushing as a team. Brevard scored 21 points in the third quarter and 14 in the fourth to win 42-6.
Was this at Brevard?
It was.
So
it was.
Clearly the cold weather Friday night, because it was freaking cold.
Yeah.
Had to have played
well, and I think
there.
We talked about it last week, was when you win such an emotional game, I mean, that's almost like a state championship for East Rutherford.
Sure.
And so you probably think like the not that they weren't refocused, not anything like that, but I mean, they probably had to expend a ton of energy, ton of mental energy, they were probably thinking, oh, hell, we'll just go in there and we can do the same thing again. And Brevard, I mean, I can tell you Brevard was super excited to be playing East Rutherford and not Reidsville.
So does this open up for Brevard? I mean,
it definitely does.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
anytime Reidsville's out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Shelby, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit before, but, you know, they played Community School of Davidson this past Friday. Didn't look great, you know, on the stat line. I think they were only up 21-7 last time I saw, something like that. Obviously, they did win. I don't know the final score, but Brevard, fantastic football team.
So this game stopped with 4 minutes to go. Too many unsportsmanlike penalties on East Rutherford. They called it with 4 minutes to go.
How do you stop a playoff game?
Well, it was 42-6.
Still, I mean,
unless you eject everybody.
Yeah, that's what you have to.
There
do,
had
right?
to have been a. There had to have been a fight. Right?
Yeah.
We kept seeing where it was getting testy. We kept seeing online, hey, you're getting
they
testy.
Probably both, I would say both benches cleared.
I'm wondering if Brevard has everybody available this week.
Oh, that's true. We haven't heard that, have we?
No.
Well, if you get so many ejections, then I think, well, I know in regular season, then you get kicked out of the playoffs where you don't even make it. I don't know how it works if you get in so many, you get so many ejections that when you're already in playoffs, I would
you'll be interested to follow to see if they have anybody that got such a suspension or ejection or whatever to where they're not. Because I would imagine punches were probably thrown.
Yeah. So you hate to see that, but I am glad to see Brevard roll here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the second half tells the story there. I mean, just getting after it, scoring unanswered points in the playoffs. I mean, you got to just. Kudos to Brevard.
Yeah, 7-6 at halftime, like we mentioned, 42-6 final. This game shouldn't count because they didn't play the whole thing, but I guess we'll go and keep it in. Carson Pat Lewis got it right.
Vegas would void the bets.
Yeah, yeah.
Ball knowers. We are.
So before we get to the next game, you ever seen a penalty? Have you ever seen a referee like they did in the State Carolina game give everybody on the field an unsportsmanlike?
No, but I like that.
Yeah, everybody on the field got an unsportsmanlike. So the next one would have been an ejection on any one of those 22 players.
I like it. Is that a special flag?
It was the black flag the guy had at Irwin.
The Irwin guy had a black
flag. You ever seen a black
flag?
I have not. Only in NASCAR.
Did. No, we did.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah. So the umpire at the game, you know, they're from out of town, right? Third round?
Yeah.
He had a black flag. It was the black flag.
It was a Jolly Roger.
Dude, I was like,
flag. Wasn't a beanbag. It was a black flag. Black
so that's
flag.
What I was thinking it was, like the recovery.
Yeah, like he was throwing a fumble flag. Right. The thrumble beanbag. Fumble beanbag.
It was a black flag.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How does that guy get a third-round playoff game? Right, he can't even get the right flag color.
Right when it happened, I was like, "What? That's a special flag. I don't know much. I mean, I'm learning
it's
football.
It's a big deal, right?
I was literally like waiting to hear, like, what special penalty is this going to be?
That's like when I first started umpiring and everybody had light blue, dark blue, and somebody wore black. I'm like, whoa, who's this guy I think he is?
Right. Yep.
It was probably Derek.
Yeah, it was Derek.
The black is clean.
I like
clean
the black.
Look.
It is clean.
So now black is the way to go. It's clean. It could be the same with flags.
It
just
is
saying.
Clean.
So next up, we've talked about at the Irwin game. West Charlotte at Irwin.
Oof.
Irwin getting 9.5 here, the underdog at home. It didn't go well. West Charlotte wins 58-0. Engle, 9 of 28 for 92 yards and 4 interceptions. Milky Ray had 18 carries for 40 yards. They only had 141 yards of offense. They finished 10-2 overall this year. They're the 5-0 in the MAC. And Caden Engle, guys, as many passes as he thrown, he was not sacked all year. Not one sack. 5 senior offensive linemen will move on next year. So that could be an issue for Irwin next year. For West Charlotte, they were led by Jamari Nichols, the quarterback. He was 12 of 18 for 192 yards, 3 touchdowns, and an interception. So we were there. It was tough.
Indeed it was. I have some thoughts on the game. See if you all agree with
us. Give them to us,
Pat. So, yeah, obviously I've mentioned it already 38,000 times on how cold it was. I think we all hypothesized, though, before the game that would be more of an impact against West Charlotte than Irwin. But as the game unfolded, certainly West Charlotte early on had trouble, you know, catching the ball and that type of thing in their first drive or two, right? But it seemed like the cold permeated the Irwin players a little more than it did the West Charlotte players in the time we were there. Would you agree?
Yeah, it was that. I mean, definitely a lot of drop balls. You've seen that, like maybe the ball was a little too tough for them. But
the snaps, I think. The snaps, I think, was definitely a difference maker.
So Irwin, Irwin drives it down the field, yeah, first possession.
They look good.
They're on about the 25-yard line, fourth and one. Try to throw a slant, didn't work out. And from there, their offense was almost non-existent.
Well, from what I've seen, like linebackers and the safeties, no matter where the play was, they were flying.
If Irwin scores a touchdown there, does it change anything other than it's 58-7?
Yeah, I mean, Irwin couldn't get past the line of scrimmage without a couple linebackers and that safety dropping on him.
I think it actually does if they score there.
You think so?
Because I think that they looked pretty good executing on offense in that first drive. And then when it came up short, it almost like deflated them a little
took
bit.
Took the air out of the
took
sails.
Took the air out of the sails. And they to Lewis, didn't you just say that the offense was almost non-existent after that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, fundamentally, yeah, West Charlotte has athletes all over the field, but Irwin is no slouch. I mean, they have big offensive linemen, and Engel can throw the ball. There's no doubt of that. He proved it. I just think that I don't know if there was some sort of an intimidation factor or some other extenuating circumstance that we weren't privy to that was happening down there on the sideline with it, other than just, you know, the brutal cold of everything. But I think if they had gotten a touchdown there, I don't know if about a field goal. I think if they've gotten the touchdown there, at least it would have been a closer game.
Derek, do you kick the field goal on the 20-25? Or do you go for it?
It was fourth and
one?
Less than one.
Fourth and less than one. I'm probably going for it.
I probably would have run the football there, but I mean, who am I?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like Pat said, I think, you see it in these upsets a lot, you know, when teams that hang around, what's the common denominator there is they get a score early and they start that belief of being able to hang around, especially nowadays. Kids aren't stupid. It's not like it's 1990 anymore where these kids don't know how good this team from West Charlotte is. They know, they get the West Charlotte kids are in their DMs talking trash, vice versa. They're, you know, posting about each other on social media. They know. Kids aren't stupid. They know. And they knew how tall of a task it was, and to go down and not score on the first drive, it's deflating. And especially, you know, once the cold hits and things aren't going well, it can snowball on you in a hurry.
Definitely, and I think that's what happened. It just got away from them, and they never could.
Yeah.
I mean, four interceptions, I mean, that's the most he's thrown all year.
I think as much as the cold, I think more of an impact of what I saw was – how fast and how hard West Charlotte hit on defense. If you noticed, I mean, the receivers were not comfortable in their stop routes trying to, you know, seeing that ball in. I mean, they were expecting to get licked, and there were some very, very hard hits in that game. So I think the cold, and also when you drive down and you don't get that score, you had two stops on defense already. And
yes, so we didn't mention that. Irwin did stop them on the first drive.
They did.
Yeah,
definitely. So, and it was one of those, we talked I don't know what the final score of the first quarter was, but it was like, I was like, guys, the yardage is probably, you know,
because it was pretty close.
It was pretty close because West Charlotte got both of their scores. They were inside of their own, they were inside of the Irwin 40 when they got the ball.
Yeah, an interception. Was it an interception or a fumble?
One was an interception, and then one was the punt that only went 15, 20 yards.
Yeah.
It was tough. It was tough. Definitely want to see Irwin win that game.
Yeah, we were all sitting there. On the Irwin side, pulling for them, it was just a tough, tough, tough matchup.
So, Derek Carson got this one right. They wanted West Charlotte to win. So,
did not want West Charlotte to win. I just had to vote with my head.
That's fake news. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, last game, and what a game this was. Crest at Hickory.
Wow.
Hickory, a 9.5-point favorite. Final score, Hickory 63. Crest 48. That doesn't tell the whole story.
No, does. Not at all.
Hickory scores 14 in the fourth quarter. Crest 0. Fantastic game back and forth. Crest led by their quarterback, of course, Brady Stober. 17 of 23 for 478. Carson, he threw 6 touchdown passes.
I mean, that's we saw it last year. I mean, he's a special, special, special talent. And I guess I'm more shocked that he's still – I mean, he's, I believe, committed to play Division I baseball. But you would have to think – I mean, do you think he's probably got some opportunities to play football somewhere?
I think he's going to Sanford to play football.
Sanford to play football. Yeah.
So
was he committed last year to play baseball?
I think so, but I don't
think
know.
He was. Okay.
The problem is
– someone fact-check me on that.
When you're looking at he's not,
that makes
he's
sense.
Not 6'3".
Yeah.
He's 5'10".
Yeah.
And yeah, that makes sense.
That scares people off. They were also led by their running back, Ian Lackey, 22 carries for 100 yards and 3 touchdowns. Receiver Little, Six catches, 235 yards, and two touchdowns. Guys, that's 40 yards a catch. 40 yards a catch. That's insane.
Need to get that guy the ball some more. Get that number down.
So, so Crest had a lead going in the fourth quarter. Couldn't hold it.
I remember the thread that you all were talking about the score, getting the scores in, and it was that way. I mean, Crest was winning this game all the way till right there at the end.
Yeah. I mean, what a game. What a game. Pat Lewis, Derek, get this one correct. Crest not able to get one stop in the second half and not able to score in the second quarter. I mean, it cost them the game.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to win the last 2 minutes, obviously, and the fourth quarter. Hickory did that. 14 points in the fourth quarter. It's going to be hard to come back from that.
So we got – that's it. Player of the week. You guys want to talk about our player of the week this week?
Yeah, who is it?
Do you know who it is, Carson?
I do. I don't have it in front of me.
So Murphy Cam Clem, 19 carries, 239 yards, and a touchdown, getting the win over Robbinsville and headed to Mount Heritage this week. So, Cam Clem. That's a fantastic name. I got to tell you, I like that name. Cam Clem.
It's a football guy.
Do you think his middle name is like Charles and his initials are CCC?
Jesus.
Triple C. C cubed. I mean,
why would you not think so?
Do you think that's it?
Yeah.
What do you think it is?
Call up the coach. Find out.
Yeah.
Cam Clem. That's a great name.
It is a good name.
Congratulations, Mr. Clem. Good job.
Very nice. Very nice. So we got four games this week. Are you guys ready? We got to talk about the picks last week.
We don't have to. Where's that standings?
They didn't go fantastic. We got to throw the Bavard game out, but since y'all are saying no, we keep it in.
Yes.
It wasn't even a completed game. So Mike, 1-4. Lewis, 2-3. Derek, Carson, and Pat, 3-2.
Yes, sir.
Guys, we got a three-way tie for the lead, and we're picking through the state championship, so just so you know. In the lead, Pat, Derek, Mike, 55-47. Lewis and Carson still two back at 53-49.
Someone's getting closer.
Yeah. Weren't you two back last week, too?
Nope, I wasn't.
And I'm up there.
I was four back. Yep.
So, Pat, welcome to the party.
Yeah, don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years.
I'll tell you what.
All right, LL Cool J.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So we got four games that have some, WNC ties, Mountain 7, MAC out of it. So we got some ties here. We're going to go over four games. You guys ready?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
We got a couple games you guys may not know a lot about unless you did some homework, which I know most of you probably didn't.
No.
So up first, we have 10-2 West Charlotte traveling to Dudley, 13-0. West Charlotte took out Irwin while Dudley took out Reynolds. Dudley a 6.5-point favorite. Dudley won last week 20-7 over J.M. Robinson. Their defense gave up their first points since October 4th. What's the date?
Today is December 1st.
So it's been 2 months since they gave up a touchdown?
Unreal.
Whew. Okay. They gave up a touchdown since 10-4. They were down 7-0, Dudley was, headed to the fourth quarter. They got the win. West Charlotte, they've only given up 3 points in the playoffs. At their average score in the three playoffs games, you guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
55-1.
Oof.
55-1.
Indeed.
Wow.
All right.
That Dudley defense is going to get tested, I think.
Yep.
Derek? Dudley or West Charlotte? Dudley a 6.5-point favorite.
This one's tough. This is the game of the week, you know, in North Carolina, I think, is this one right here. But I can't pick against 2,300 kids. I mean, they're 8A, playing 3A. They're getting points. Give me the West Charlotte Lions to win outright on Friday night.
Wow. Ooh.
Lewis?
I'm going with Dudley.
No reason. You're just going with Dudley.
I'm going with Dudley. I mean, they got the advantage. I trust their stats a little bit. I mean, West Charlotte's been performing in the playoffs, but Dudley's been performing all year. So I'm going with Dudley.
Against that tough conference they play.
That's okay. I don't care.
Not for sure.
Dudley's defense all year has been outstanding. I saw some clips of Dudley. I mean, they got some studs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw West Charlotte in person. Dudley. I'm taking Dudley here.
I'm gonna get on West Charlotte here, and I think they're gonna definitely test that Dudley defense. I don't think Dudley holds them out of the end zone. So I think I don't know that I pick them outright like Derek did, but I do think I'll take West Charlotte in the points.
Getting points in the fourth round, I think you got to take those. That's, right?
It's less than a touchdown, yeah. And Dudley's probably gonna win by 17. I think.
Okay.
What do you, so if the Clip team it. Team total, what do you guys think the team total for West Charlotte would be set at?
24.5.
Is everybody here taking the under?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Under for sure. I don't think they score 24.5.
Yeah, I don't know if they do either. But what I will say is what I saw with my own eyes, I'm going with the eye test. I have not seen Dudley with my own eyes, and that could be that could come back and bite me, but I'm going to go with West Charlotte, and I do also think that they went outright.
Okay.
Wow. Well, there you go.
That's one y'all got wrong. Go ahead, mark it down. So next up, we got North Lincoln, 12-1 at Hickory, 13-0. North Lincoln's only loss. Can you guess who it was, Lewis?
Who was it?
That would be Hickory. Hmm. They lost to Hickory earlier this year, 60-25. That was on October 2nd. In the playoffs, Hickory scoring 53 a game while giving up 18. Stober against North Lincoln was 23 of 25 for 453 yards and five touchdowns.
Wow.
For North Lincoln, of course, they haven't lost since they lost to Hickory. Against Hickory, Tim Folk led the way. He had seven carries for 157 yards and a touchdown. And the other running back, Shannon Wingate, he had eight carries, 108, and a touchdown. They rushed it for 376 yards, but came up short. Pat, Hickory's a 16.5-point favorite.
Yeah,
does Hickory cover it? Do they score 70 this week?
I know how hard it is to beat a team twice, but Hickory's easily going to get this done. I have no question. They're going to blow the spread out.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I'm with Pat Hickory. I think I've gotten Hickory all the way to the end right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to beat the champs, right? I'm going Hickory as well, but I knew Pat was going to say, it's hard to beat them twice.
You knew I was going to say that?
Yeah, you said it a couple of weeks
ago. Did we say it was 30.5?
16.5.
16.5.
16.5. Derek?
I got to go Hickory as well. You know, I've said it for the last 2 weeks, how hard it is to beat a team twice. Well, every team that has beaten them prior whooped them. In the playoffs too, so I think Hickory just has too much firepower. They stop North Lincoln's triple option wing T attack, whatever it is you want to call it, and they name their score and walk to the state semifinal.
I think so as well.
Yeah,
Carson,
I'll keep the graphic. Makes my job a little bit easier. I'm going to stick with Hickory here. I just it's one of those. We were texting Friday night, and it's like I felt good for 3.5 quarters about having Crest at +9.5.
Yes.
And it's like when you have
the wheels fell off.
Power like that, it's just when you can score that fast, it's just – it makes it very – I mean, they could be up 12 points in the fourth quarter. And so I just don't know if Hickory – I don't think Hickory's taking knees right now. I just don't. I mean, they're going for 6 touchdowns. I think Stober's probably got to be closing in on some touchdown records, school records. I'm sure he's already shattered. So I'm going to go with Hickory here.
Derek, if I'd have told you last week Crest is going to be up 63, would you have taken the under?
No.
You thought Hickory would score more than 60 against Crest?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Excuse me. I thought you were talking
last
about...
week.
Okay.
If I told you Hickory would give up or Crest would give up 63 to Hickory, would you would have thought I was crazy, or you'd have been like, no, that's probably right?
No, I would not have thought that was correct.
63.
Well, obviously, you know, you give up 63 points, there ain't a chance in hell you're winning the game.
It was close, though. They had a chance.
Yeah, had a chance.
They did. So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance.
So next up, we got a little bit of a more local flair. Forest Hill, 10-3, headed to Brevard, 10-2. In the playoffs, Brevard is scoring 40 a game. Meanwhile, Forest Hill, their last loss was also on October 4th to Monroe. They're scoring 37 in the playoffs while giving up 21, and they're led by their senior quarterback, Dilworth. He throws it for about 190 a game, 26 touchdowns on the year, and 8 interceptions. Carson, Brevard, a 6.5-point favorite. What do you think here?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Brevard. I'm going to stay on the Brevard train.
Okay. Lewis?
I'm also going to go Brevard. They are straight rolling out there. I think they're pumped after last week.
Yeah.
Brevard's hand down is going to win this.
Derek?
Yeah, I got to go Brevard here as well. I think you got Shelby, Brevard, winner goes to state championship.
Is there that big a difference in 3A and 4A? Because Shelby lost by 40 to a team that lost in the second round.
By 40.
Yeah, I think so.
40.
Yeah, I'm saying Shelby lost, and then the team that beat Shelby lost by 40.
Yeah, that's true. Right, I didn't guess.
Right, yeah.
So but, there's that big of a gap between 3A and 2A?
At the elite level, yes. I think the top tier 2A team versus the top tier 3A team, not equal at all.
Hmm. Yeah, you're probably right.
And especially because, you know, the enrollment disparity is there,
sure.
Especially on the tail end of a realignment.
Brevard for me as well, Pat.
Yeah, you got to go with Brevard here. You know, they're going to get it done. Go Brevard.
So next up, the last game we got. This could be a good one, boys. Murphy, 12-1 at Mount Heritage, 11-0. Murphy hasn't lost since week one when they lost to Franklin. In the playoffs, they're scoring 39 a game while giving up 13. And like we talked about earlier, sophomore running back Cam Clem averages 119 a game. He has 24 touchdowns on the year. For Mount Heritage, they haven't been tested since week two against Irwin. And in the playoffs, their average score, 49-9.
Yeah.
In the playoffs. Mount Heritage, a 15.5-point favorite here, Lewis. Is Murphy able to cover the 15.5?
I don't think Murphy should even show up. Mount Heritage has already got this game.
Oh, man. Mount Heritage, they're playing fantastic football. They haven't covered the last 2 weeks, but they have won. But you know what? I'm taking Mount Heritage.
Yeah.
Pat?
Yeah, you know, again, like I said last week, this is a team that's obviously good, but they're also playing inspired ball up there. You know, we were talking about there's that road that goes from Burnsville over to Spruce Pine, and there's literally a water tank still in the ditch there and the devastation in that community.
That so is crazy. That's not a water tank.
I don't know what that is, but it's huge.
That would be an oil tank.
Is that an oil tank?
Yeah. Golly, an oil company.
It's literally in the ditch right next to the road.
We might know something about that. Go ahead.
Indeed. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, they're not only a good team, they're playing inspired ball up there. They're going to get this done. The community is rallying behind them. Nothing's stopping Mountain Heritage.
Carson.
What did you have the spread at?
15.5.
15.5.
15.5.
I think this is my move. I'm going to go. This is the move. I'm going to pick up a game here.
I'm not totally against Murphy. I think they got a chance. Scoop is close.
So,
Cam can run the football. He's sophomore.
He can run the football. Mountain Heritage, as everything Pat said, they've got some very, very good players on defense.
And obviously, this game will be over by 8:25.
This game will be a running clock, theoretically, without it being a 40-point spread. It will be a running clock. Maybe if there's a penalty here or there, but I'm going to go with Murphy. I do think Mountain Heritage, there's just something about the spreads right now. Mountain Heritage, they've not covered their last 2 weeks. I think Simmons may be putting a little bit too much stock in some of their teams they've played throughout the season.
They're still winning by 40 per playoff game.
Yeah. Let me interject.
Murphy's covering. Mountain Heritage wins.
Does Murphy beat Irwin?
Does Murphy beat Irwin?
Do you think Murphy beats Irwin if they were to face each other?
I mean, I would think probably not.
Then why are you going with Murphy?
Because Mount Heritage beat Irwin.
I'm well aware of the Mount Heritage. How bad did Mount Heritage beat Irwin?
5.
Yeah, it was a close game.
Oh, it was 5 points. Wait, would 5 them. Points be inside of 15.5?
It would.
Okay.
I was told there'd be no math, but here we are.
I wish we still had that clip. I know. I'm a football guru.
Yeah, well,
I understand Heritage, how the spreads
guys,
work.
Mountain Heritage can win. They can win, and I can still cover. So as I'm 2 games back, obviously I've done something right in these last couple weeks. So say what you want. Y'all can jump on Mountain Heritage, Derek.
Derek, go ahead.
Carson's in the lab cooking. I'm just going to deliver straight results here and say Mountain Heritage covers the 15. Was it 14.5, 15.5?
15.5.
15.5. Not enough. They've been winning by 30. Murphy, fantastic ball club. A lot of history, a lot of tradition. Mountain Heritage is on a roll.
Okay.
Get out of the way.
Derek, does Mountain Heritage win the state championship?
I think we all hope so.
They got to beat Mount Airy.
Mount Airy, and then whenever you get there, whenever you get to Chapel Hill or wherever it is that they're playing this year, then you got to beat Tarboro. And those two in a row is tough.
Yeah. Who was it I saw? Did you guys see the stat today where somebody in 1A or 2A has more kids than like half of 3A playoffs?
Oh, I didn't see that. Who is that?
So I got the stat right here. So we got a tweet from Joel Bryant from High School Overtime. Another example of why we should reclassify every 2 years instead of four. One of the four remaining in 1A East is bigger than 75% of the remaining teams in 2A East. So looking at the 1A East, it's Pender. Yep. They got 692. They'll be 3A next year. I mean, very similar to the West Charlotte. They're 3A this year. They'll be 8A next year. Derek, you think we should reclassify every 2 years?
Two, maybe too much. I think we talked about it
scheduling.
A little bit. Yeah.
Scheduling's tough.
Yeah, the scheduling is tough. They would have to do some type of, you know, renewal system on the contract where we get in line with the other states around us to where those fringe teams can go play, you know, the Gaffneys, the Dormans, whoever they want to play out of the South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia area. But, you know, it's so tough to realign because our state is so wide and geographically diverse. It makes it difficult. And I definitely wouldn't want to be in the state's athletic association's shoes. I'd have to draw this up.
It's tough, though, because, like, for example, when my little brother was down at Seaforth, which is a new school outside of Chapel Hill, when they first opened up, they were just freshmen and sophomores. So they were in at the smaller classification. Well, then that next year, they added another eighth grade group, so it was freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. And then the third year they were opened up was their first time in four, but the state hadn't reclassified. So they were actually playing in, I think, 2A, you know, and a lot. They were winning a lot.
They were very competitive.
They were very competitive, and they won some state championships in wrestling, some like girls' basketball was playing for state championships, and they were actually – so I think it's tough when you look at that and you're like, you know, you've got these new schools that are popping up everywhere, and they don't pop up with, you know, with their first with 1,400 yeah. students. But in 2 years, hell, they're having 1,400 students.
Yeah, but like West Charlotte's been around since 1910.
Correct.
I mean, they've been around forever.
Yeah, which I think, I mean, we're getting to the 8A, so I mean, this should help with some of this disparity as far as that goes. But as far as there's still going to be some tough things with. With it being is it every 4 years is the reclassifications? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's tough.
So with Seaforth, I know they played in a baseball state championship. Do you think it was coaching, or do you think it was because of the higher enrollment against a smaller division?
Well, they did not. They lost. They lost to Whiteville.
Whiteville's
a state powerhouse.
They beat Owen on a regular basis in baseball back in the day when I was
a kid. Did they really?
We played them in football 1 year too.
Whiteville?
Third round.
Yeah. So, but no, they.
He was coaching because they lost. You think, or
it was coaching for sure.
Yeah,
coaching through the end.
Who was the head coach?
I think his name was Landon Jones.
Landon Jones. Yeah.
But Seaforth had a guy. He's actually playing at Derek's school right now. Jaron Stevenson.
Jaron Stevenson had a great night last night. Unfortunately, Alabama didn't get the win, but Jaron played fantastic.
Landon was like, just imagine like walking. He was like, yeah.
Wait, we're talking about basketball?
Yeah.
I was going to say Alabama won yesterday in football. Right? Yeah.
So we're talking about 2A, like what a 5-star means. It's like, imagine you got, you know, 2A, you had 2A basketball with a 5-star basketball recruit.
6'11
like, guy. 6'11 guy. So that was something.
Does a 5-star make more of a difference? Football, basketball, baseball. Got to be basketball, right?
Yeah, one out of five, yeah.
Basketball, unless it's a pitcher. And then a pitcher can make the most difference. But basketball
is
definitely.
He can still only pitch every, three games, two games?
Yeah, but whenever he pitches, it's, baseball's got the pitch count rule. So, yeah, it's definitely, that makes it more difficult. But when you control every pitch, you can win. You could take the best pitcher in the state, put him in a 1A. He could beat the best team in the state in 4A. In that one game. But that's why when the state championship goes to the series, best two out of three, or the final four goes to 2 out of 3, that kind of eliminates that.
Yeah.
So
what about in football if he's a quarterback, a 2-way quarterback, he can run for 150 a game and throw for 300
it's just,
a game?
Football's too much of a team sport.
Okay.
Basketball's way more individualized.
No, sure.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, the pitcher, and that's kind of why, you know, when I was coaching baseball, why in the MAC we wanted to go to playing Tuesday, Friday, playing the same team.
Yeah, that was the Alex Destino rule because he never lost to Reynolds. He pitched against Reynolds and Robertson every game. And we would play – you'd play every team in the MAC.
North
and
Buncombe?
Then spring break, yep, and North Buncombe. And then you'd go to spring break, and then you'd flip the schedule, and you'd play every other team.
Yep, and they'd match up and not throw their guy. And then you're screwed because if you're a top three caliber team, then you're just seeing ones every day. You don't get to see the
bullets. We could beat everybody else without him on the mound, but it was like it was a cheat code because he would, you know, I think he beat Reynolds three times my senior year. We played him in the conference tournament, and they didn't have anything for him. Which not, I mean, not many people.
I like
did.
The way Derek's looking at Carson right now.
I'm just
remember
saying,
that, buddy.
I'm just saying.
Dude, it's phenomenal.
No, it's like that. That's why it's the Carlin Pickens thing. You know, she's one of the greatest athletes to ever come through Western North Carolina. And in softball, you can throw every single game.
Is it because it's underhand? Is that the reason? Because in baseball, you throw it over.
It doesn't put stress.
They
on
say
the
it's more of a natural movement. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure.
I can tell you, I don't walk down the street throwing underhand.
That's not a natural movement.
That's not a natural movement for me.
But no, the sports are also different. Interesting.
Mike also walks down the street like this, but
no. Yeah, his wrists are flipped in and out.
Not true. I got some breaking news for you guys.
What is it?
Yeah, NC State KC Concepcion enters the transfer portal.
Ooh.
He wasn't really involved in the offense much this year anyway. So
well, they paid a lot of money to bring him back.
A lot of money, and I knew when his brother decided to go to Kansas State 2 weeks ago, he wasn't coming back.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he'll probably be sought after. That's a very premium position. Does he play inside receiver?
Yes, we also line him up at running back at some other places. But
he's kind of like a Debo Samuel almost. Like you can play him anywhere on the field.
What about Justin Tucker? He just missed his seventh field goal of the year. He used to be the best kicker.
He is washed. This is not a hot take, but he is washed. I mean, he is not.
You think his leg's shot?
He's a liability. He's missed seven field goals.
Yeah, seven. Yeah. They're probably 60 plus, but yes,
at
he's
some
missed
point,
seven.
No, he's missed some inside of 40, inside of 30. At some point, you just gotta. I don't know. You go for it.
Did you know he was a walk-on originally?
I was not aware.
No. A walk-on?
Yes.
No, he should go back and walk on. He should retire and just hang. I mean, he was the greatest kicker ever.
He was. But hey, we all get old and we start to fail. Look at Pat.
Look at me. I'm a complete tire fire over here.
That's what Mary said.
A tire fire?
Yeah.
You're a tire fire.
Okay. A hot mess.
Still flying helicopters.
No, I have no helicopters. So one of the things that we did last year with the podcast when we would talk with the coaches is kind of get their perspective a little bit on, you know, kind of what the recruiting process looked like from their end. And obviously they had wonderful tidbits and bits of information, but having gone through this now on my end as a parent and having seen kind of the effects, a little bit of what NIL and the portal and all that sort of thing, I thought it might be good to just try and get different perspectives on the recruiting process now that the football season's kind of wrapping up. And Lewis, I know that when we went through this over at my house last year, as a parent, I literally felt like I was building the plane while I was flying it with this. I mean, there was so much stuff coming at you. You didn't know what was worth a crap and what wasn't. And a lot of it was bunk and, you know, some of it was pretty good. And, you know, a lot of it was just good old fashioned elbow grease. What was, do you have any takeaways on all that from all those talks with those coaches last year?
It kind of seemed like there was two different sides of this thing. Some schools, you know, like as a freshman, they're very engaged with the students and they're talking to the kids and they're giving them information. Hey, do you want to pursue this? Do you not? On the other side, some schools it's left up in the air. Do you want? You got to figure out your own. You know, it sounds like remembering from you last year, it was very much like here's the golden pathway. Now it's on you.
Yeah.
Right. And I think very much and really with the evolution of the transfer portal and everything, the focus is no longer really on high school seniors.
Yeah.
Right.
Very true.
Recruiting is very difficult. They would much rather, you know, get a freshman in college already with film and all this. And then maybe D2, D3s are picking up high school seniors.
Yeah, and that was definitely a takeaway that I got was, you know, these kids that, you know, Brendan played with and you know, they're all really eager to go to the Division I programs, like the Clemsons here in the area, the South Carolina or UNC and App State and that type of thing. And yeah, obviously those are great programs and you want to do that. But something I picked up on is that, you know, the pressures of those programs on the coaches, they've got literally a couple of years before, you know, stuff starts hitting the fan for them. Now, if you're in their shoes, do you take the risk and the gamble on going to look at high school prospects that you know you're going to have to take some time and develop? Or do you have to get somebody, like you just said, with film from college and get them on the field right now?
And the other side of that is, I mean, they already have a year in the classroom. They know what they're going to do there.
Yeah.
Right.
And what their attitude is, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Like, I mean, much like with your son, I'm sure Addison did all of his studies and everything in high school. So
I'm sure so too. Well, anyway, that's a good segue into this. I figured it'd be good, since Brendan already went through this whole thing, that we get him over here and have him kind of talk about this process and what he did and what worked and what didn't work. For those of y'all that aren't aware, Brendan graduated from AC Reynolds last year, pretty accomplished offensive lineman, and had a successful recruiting journey and landed at Eastern Kentucky University, which is a Division I FCS school on a preferred walk-on. So anyway, Brendan, welcome to Behind the Beard WNC.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So yeah, man, paint this picture. I'm curious right out of the gate. College football, you've got a year of that under your belt now with your red shirt year behind you. What was different about college versus what you did in high school? What is that whole thing like? Paint that picture.
So what I noticed, like, immediately as soon as I moved on to campus, is college football is a job. And I used to think that high school football was pretty hard at times, but no. Thinking back, I had it very, very easy. Nothing difficult about it at all. So when I got to college, camp was the first immediate big difference. At AC Reynolds, we had like camp, but it wasn't at all hard or anything. It was just a few practices a day, maybe a lift. But as soon as I get to EKU, it's 3 weeks long, 18-hour days, and like a 30-minute break. So that was immediate. The second day I moved on to campus.
My favorite story when you guys moved him on the campus was, I think you were lugging the PC around.
Yeah, his gaming PC.
Yeah, if you don't know, in addition with the helicopter, Brendan has a state-of-the-art $50,000 PC he plays Pac-Man on. But anyway, he was lugging that from his car to his dorm room, and I think the coach turned to you and was like, "Hey, bud, you're not going to need that."
Yeah, he said... He said, I don't think you have much time to do that right about now.
Yeah.
That played out, too, it sounded like.
Yeah, I didn't touch that thing until after camp.
Were you disheartened with that 18-hour schedule, or was it a rude awakening?
No, I kind of expected that. I kind of expected the long days, but I don't know. It was more so of just like, yeah, this is real college football now. Like, I know I'm really here. This isn't just horror stories. I've heard about it from my dad and from coaches.
I remember, you know, when you go to a college and you're taking those early freshman classes, they called them weed out classes back when I went there too. You know, you got 200 kids shoved into a giant auditorium, and, you know, they're pretty tough and they're brutal, and they're intended to sort out who wants and needs to be there and who's going to be packing it in and heading it back. Do you get that feeling a little bit that camp was in that, along those lines or not?
Yeah. Well, there was the classroom aspect of it, and that's true. They have these huge classes, like 300-plus kids in it, and then a lot of kids fail out early because they just don't do their work. But it's also really real for the football aspect, too, because we had, like, 12 guys quit on day three of camp.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so our roster went from, like, 130, 140, right back down to, like, 120 again.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how long did the 18-hour thing go on? I mean, like, as soon as school starts, it has to chill out, right?
Yeah. It was from, like, August 1st until first day of classes, so August 19th.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what does it look like whenever you start classes?
Whenever we started classes, it chilled off a little bit. We do our classes in the morning, get that out of the way, and then from about 1 o'clock until, like, 6 or 7, we're with the team all day. So There's three different lift times that we'll go to. It's either it's whatever fits with your classroom schedule. So then you'll do your lift, and then you'll have meetings, position, unit meetings. Some days you'll have a team meeting. And then after that, you'll just go straight into practice. And then after that, you're pretty much done for the day.
So looking back on your senior year, I mean, what would you have done different to get you, like, ready for this camp?
I would have just gained more weight and conditioned a lot more.
Okay.
I will say that because, I mean, I heard...
So you're not gaining weight like me, Mike, and your dad, right?
No, I'm trying to gain it all on muscle. But, yeah, I'm pretty undersized. They want me gain about 40, 50 more pounds as it is right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you obviously have a new set of coaches, and we all know that the expectations at Reynolds were obviously pretty high with performance and making it pretty far in the playoffs every year. What were the what are the expectations of your existing coaching staff with EKU?
I mean, the new coaching staff, I mean, college football, it's a lot different, and it's not so much just you have a few star players like you have at high school. High school, I notice, is a huge skill gap between players. You have kids with Division I talent, and you have kids who barely make it past JV. And then in college, everyone, no matter what, Division III, II, I, it's everyone was a captain on their high school team. So the coaches see that if the first string guys aren't doing well, then they have also tremendous talent in the second string. So if you mess up consistently, you're just not going to be in the game. So it's pretty much perfection. Or close to it.
How much of that turnover did you see throughout the year? Like say August 1st, there was some, you know, you had your first string guys. How many of those made it to first string at the end of the year?
On the offensive line alone, not too many. I mean, we had two or three stay the whole year, but the two guards positions were rotating a lot throughout the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be curious to know with all that work and everything, do you have like perks or better question. Do you have resources that are at your disposal, you know, for your studies to help you manage your schedule? What does that look like?
Yeah, we actually have mandatory study hall, and it's just depending on how academically challenged you are or how much of a risk you are academically, depending on the hours you need to go. So
you were there like every day, right?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I have to do 8 hours a week, but I have some buddies who have to do 16.
Do you remember the ESPN segment with, I think it was Deshaun Watson, and they were interviewing him while he was in college, and he was currently in his study hall, but he was at his dorm. Do you remember that interview?
I don't think so.
And they were like, let us see your study hall mates. And it was like, like six blonde girls. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Is that how your study hall was?
No, not quite like that.
And Carson had an interesting question on the text thread that was kind of in line with that. Carson was wondering, let me see if I can pull this up here and say, yeah, he said, ask Brendan for Carson. Is it true that college football players don't go to class and have nerds do their homework for them? So is that accurate?
No, I haven't experienced that. A lot of the coaches do class checks like a few times a week. So they'll have the quality of control coaches. They'll go and peek their head in the classroom, make sure we're all there.
Indeed. So what are the perks? You get any? You get some cool clothing that you come back with. What's the story with all the perks that you get?
Well, yeah, the upside of being a college football player is all the merchandise we get. Like, I'll go into the locker room and there'll just be a new hoodie sitting in my locker. And this would be pretty cool. And I don't have to worry about gear, like practice game gear. Just ask them for an undershirt. They'll just throw it at me. I mean, it's just fun. I'm living the dream, you know?
Yeah, you got a lot of good buddies?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, that's where I made some of my closest friends.
So your sophomore year, you kind of started doing the showcase camps and all of that. I mean, did they help? Why was there any value there?
No, I don't really support the showcase camps. I mean, back whenever I didn't really know too much about it with my dad, we heard about I got a camp invite, showcase camp. But those are just pretty much, I mean, they help to develop you, learn some new skills. But if you're in there expecting to get recruited after the camp, then I wouldn't have many expectations for that from a showcase camp.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what kind of happens when you go down there?
Well, you go down there and...
First of all, you got to pay up front.
Yeah, you have to pay.
Yeah.
You have to pay to do the camp. And then you go there, you run a 40, maybe do a NFL shuttle drill. And then you, depending on your position, you break out into your position groups, and then you start doing drill works, and then there's coaches from different colleges, and they pretty much just help like tighten up your technique or help teach a new technique. They just run through what their indie period would be in practice. That's what I've seen.
Okay. So I remember you, well, you wasn't there, but it was Mike and I. We were, well, you were there because Brennan was a sophomore, but when Luke and Austin was a freshman at Reynolds, they had the parent meeting. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
And the first thing, one of the first things Coach Law says is like, listen, guys, you're going to get all this mail and stuff. If you have to pay for anything, don't do it.
Yes, and we had already signed up for the trip before we'd had that meeting.
Sure, but what, you know, I'm not trying to scratch on you. Yeah. I'm just trying to iterate to these folks. That's what Coach Laws is recommending. Like, if you have to pay for anything, it's probably really not recruiting. It's more of a sponsorship thing for the school.
Yeah, the thing I learned after the fact too is that the university systems, they hire their own firm that goes out and finds athletes all over the place, by state, by region, by the nation, that kind of thing. So. Anyway, that they have that at their disposal, so they'll hunt it from that side. Hey, also, too, that parent meeting you were talking about, Lewis, I remember very clearly because I'd been through a couple of them over there at ACR, but Coach Law has made a very clear kind of a pecking order of things, and I was shocked when I first went to the meeting, but number one was always grades.
Yep.
And then it was your metrics, like how tall are you and what's your for your position, that kind of thing. And then you got into whether or not you can perform on the field, that whole thing. And then, you know, I think you may have mentioned it earlier, just what your behavior patterns are like, you know, that kind of thing. Brendan, did that play out in your experience when you were up there at EKU, or is that in line?
It did. It did. There's a few spots that are like the lines can be bent a little bit with that. Just depending on like a lot of guys that I play with now in college, they're their grades aren't the highest. And then they're recruited for a reason. They're not just an average Joe. But it's not to the point where it's like they have a 2.0 GPA. They're all on like the threes. It could be barely a three, but that is true. You do need grades. The metrics, that's a huge part. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing I've noticed in college. So much so that whenever I'm on campus and everything, I'm probably like average height there. And then I come back in town for a weekend or something. I went to one of the Reynolds games, and I had never noticed how small those boys were that I thought, like, because I saw the difference between my team or EKU's roster, and then I go back home and I'm like, holy cow, did they shrink?
But it's a little different game, a little faster, a little bigger.
Yeah.
Well, watching the offensive line this year, they might have shrunk a little bit.
Maybe.
So you think it's like more of a balance between grades and performance?
Yeah, well, if...
But obviously there's like a minimum, like you got to be in the threes, like yeah. You're saying. But once you're there, like you don't have to be an A student if yeah. You're performing very well.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some guys who, because they perform so well, I think the coach has just recruited them even if they had just a lower GPA.
And they're like, hey, we'll make him go to study hall more. We'll provide him with resources to get that up.
Right.
Yeah.
So you obviously were a starter at Reynolds as a junior, so you were able to get some film and do that whole thing. What does that look like? I mean, you've got the huddle system and you're doing your clips. How did you operate? What did you pick clips and then you decided to send them out? What did that look like?
So I love huddle. Huddle is a great tool. I mean, they have, if your school has it and offers it, I mean, you better use it if you're trying to get recruited, because it has all the plays broken down into each play. You can go in using huddle and select which player you're on.
You got to make the little star thing.
Yeah, you got to do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's huge. And then after that, you just hit upload. Uploads it to huddle. And what I would do, I really did this senior year mostly, but I started it in junior year. I would go in and copy my huddle link to the new highlights that I just had. And then I would just send it out to every coach I would find on Twitter. It didn't matter what division they were. I didn't really care about any of that. I just I hit up JUCO coaches. I think I actually hit up a high school coach because I just saw a coach in his name. I just hit him up.
And okay, so throw enough spaghetti against the wall and kind of hope it sticks kind of angle,
yeah,
right? Okay.
Exactly.
So I remember this back I think it was your mid-junior year, maybe the beginning of junior year. You started actively working out a whole lot, much more than just in school. You were doing D1. Working with Caleb McSurdy, you're having communication with your coaches. Break down how all of that started and how it really helped you.
I had already, I would started going to D1 like freshman, sophomore year.
Yeah, it was during COVID.
Freshman year. Yeah. And I had started doing that just to help keep me in the gym. And I mean, I just fell in love with it. But it got to a point where I feel like I graduated from needing the one-on-one coaching with a big group of, I got to the point where I was the oldest one in the groups. So then we learned about Caleb. He was coming in town to help work with football players. And I mean, my dad just signed me up immediately pretty much. So it was, Caleb is probably, I would say, the biggest help I've been seeing to get me to where I am today. I don't know, his coaching was just on another level of technique, and it just applied to in-game every single time.
Yeah, so the private one-on-one coaching complemented when you were doing the athleticism and stuff that you were trying to pick up while you were in COVID. You couldn't use the gym.
Was he like your HGH hookup? Because I remember how much you shot up that year.
Nice. no HGH hookup there at all. Okay. No, actually, I thought that was actually more due to Christian's dad, Coach Lewis, wasn't it, that got you in there? And
yeah, it was after junior season. I was still about 200 pounds as an offensive tackle in my junior year. And after that, Christian invited me to go to Flynn's fitness gym with him and his dad. And, I mean, they did some serious work with me, and they helped bulk me up, and I just kept eating and eating. And then after my junior year, I gained 50, 60 pounds before my senior year. That was another huge part of it. So a big thank you to Christian and his dad. They helped me get to me into where I am too.
Well, then the other thing that happened a lot during your senior year, I think it was your senior year, the coaches from the colleges would come to the schools and you would talk with them. Did you know they were coming? What was the story with that? How did that work?
I mean, it was pretty much 50-50. It was during the spring. And if I'll just be sitting in class and I'd get a text from Coach Laws and he'd be like, "Hey, this coach is here to see you," or "Hey, this coach is here. Come meet me in my office." And I'm like, okay.
Did you have to get a hall pass for that?
No.
So
did they ask you specific things? What were they trying to find out from you?
Well, it's those coaches were like 50-50 if they were to see specifically me or not. So a lot of coaches came, like a bunch of them came through just because it was AC Reynolds, and Coach Laws just called up his guys that he knew that should be recruited and deserved to be recruited. And he would call us up, and then we would sort of be introducing ourselves to him at that point because he didn't know who we were yet. And then a lot of the times I would just get a camp invite or, send me your film on Twitter, because they had no clue who we were yet. But other times they were introducing themselves to me because they knew who I was at that point. And that's how I got a couple of my offers, the coaches coming and talking to me there.
So is there any advice, like if you knew some of the guys coming up now and they're starting to get invited up there by Coach Laws or another coach at their school to come talk to a college coach, is there a behavior you would recommend or how they should handle themselves in that setting? What does that look like?
Yeah, I would keep it professional. I mean, don't have an ego with it. I know a lot of guys who say, "Oh, I don't want to talk to him. He's D3 or he's D2. But, I mean, you never know where that coach is going to be next year. That coach could be in the SEC next year for all you know, and if you burn a bridge, then you're not getting it back. I don't know. That's the way I treated it. If a coach came to talk to me, I'd give him a most respect and just see where things went.
You start getting some offers coming in. I remember that. What does that look like? I think your first one that you got, was that Wingate that you got?
It was.
And that one, I remember you were sweating after that prospect camp. You did 13 camps that summer. That was spaghetti against the wall for sure, but those were definitely different than the showcase camps, right?
Yeah, prospect camps are a whole different story. If you should go to prospect camps if you get invited.
And how do you tell the difference between them when you get the mail?
Well, I think it says it on the mail.
Okay.
And I don't know. I don't think you should go to as many as I went to. I hated it because it was just overwhelming. And a lot of the times that I got the camp invites were from those coaches who didn't really know me at the school, and they just said, "Whatever, I'll just give them a camp invite."
Now, did you have to pay for those?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, no, we did. They weren't very expensive, though. They were maybe $50 to go to those.
Okay.
Yeah, they were cheaper, but I would just, like, the schools that you can really tell have serious interest in you, I would for sure go to those. But the schools who just say, "I mean, you can come to camp if you want," then I wouldn't bother. Like, Coach Laws told us, you should maybe pick like five camps that you think you have a reasonable shot at getting into or are interested in going to. Those 13, I maybe enjoyed three of those 13.
So was EKU one of those that you enjoyed?
It was. I did enjoy it. I think that was the best performance. Maybe it was either Wingate or EKU was my best performance at the camps.
Okay, so I mean, how did EKU get in the mix, and like, what was the determining factor for deciding EKU?
I had narrowed it down to like four or five schools that I was going to commit to, and it really just became a top two between EKU and Wingate. And the big appeal to EKU was, one, I was born in Lexington, and my sister still lives in Lexington, so I'd have family there. I had a chance to earn a full ride scholarship because I'm on a PWO there right now, and I really liked the idea of that. The appeals to Wingate, I really, really liked the coaching, the offensive line coach. He really seemed to be big into my development. I really did appreciate that. The one thing that determined the factors, I had a meeting with my parents and Coach Laws when I was about ready to commit, and he said, if you take football out of the picture, like you get injured first day of camp, where would you be happier? I really sat down and thought about that. Would I be happier on a smaller or a bigger campus? I really liked EKU's facilities more. It was really just a matter of like campus and facilities.
You got, I know you've got a bunch of players that are probably going to hit the portal from your team or coming in from the portal. There's also NIL going on. What does that look like over from your perspective? What have you gained? What knowledge have you gained this year from that side of it now that you're in the college world?
It is literally a job because, and it's not even NIL. The school directly pays the scholarship players every month. So it's like,
what kind of check are we talking about?
I mean, it's just, it's not much. It's, I mean, not at this level. I mean, it's enough to get you, they pay for your apartment, and they'll pay for your groceries, and then I think they'll just give you a little extra cash. So I think it's like close to $1,500 a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not bad for a college student. I mean, I would have been happy.
Yeah. I would have bought a lot of beer back in the Evansville days for me. That's
you can,
for sure.
You can tell the difference between a pole kid. Oh, just $1,500 a month.
Agony.
That might be enough beer money.
But yeah, that's what they pay. And then obviously some of the better guys are having NIL deals and everything, getting a lot more.
So what else jumps out in the recruiting process? If you're trying to reach out to those guys that are, you know, juniors right now or seniors and they're wanting to do it, is there anything we didn't bring up or do you think that they should know about going into their recruiting season basically?
I would just say really have no ego. I mean, if you're being under-recruited because you're only hitting up Power 5 schools, then you need to, and you want to play college football, then you need to hit up, lower your standards first, because the hardest offer you're going to get is your first offer. And after that, coaches are going to see that you're being recruited, so they're going to feel more free to offer you, and like it's less of a risk. But if one thing I will say, because I've experienced this at EKU, if you don't love the sport, don't play college football. Because I see a few guys who didn't even love it in high school, who thought, oh, I want to go D1, I think that'll help it, and he hates it. I mean, every day he complains about it and how he's going to quit as soon as football ends, as soon as the season ends. It'll be pretty miserable.
Good. Well, hey, Brendan, thanks for your time. Thanks for chiming in. Lewis, you got something?
Yeah, hold on. So, Brendan, I don't really know how it works, but on Twitter, you can kind of see the people you follow, right?
Yeah.
Cool. So, I mean, what I'm thinking is you've already done a lot of legwork here. You've already found all these coaches, even one high school coach.
Yeah.
So what's your Twitter so people can go on there and look at your tweets or whatever and send these videos out?
I think it's at Brendan_Bull. Yeah, I'm just following, I think, 800-900 coaches, I think. Just like a lot of them, the thing that sucks about Twitter though is a lot of them turned their DMs off. You can't hit them up. But if there's a will, there's a way. I would go on the coaching staff on their website and find, literally search up every single coach on that coaching staff's Twitter until I saw one with their DMs open.
And you just bombard them every week with your highlight film?
Every week.
Good for you. Yeah, so go out there and follow Brendan_Pohl. That's P-O-H-L.
Yeah.
For those of us in the mountains. But we thanks for being on here, Brendan.
Of course. If you got any other questions for Brendan, you can shoot them to our social media behind the beard, WNC.com. We'll forward those on to him. See if he has anything coming up. And then, of course, down the road, we're going to be talking with Derek a little bit more about the coaching side of things and hopefully some other folks.
Definitely. I did have one more question.
Oh, right.
So, you know, remember a couple of weeks ago, your supposed sister, Charlie, was on the show.
Agony.
Yeah.
She got about 5 minutes time. You're up to about 25 minutes. Is that like an indication that someone's the favorite?
Thanks for fueling the fire.
No, I didn't. I wasn't even aware I had a sister.
Oh, yeah. It was much later on you realized.
Yeah.
Good job, Brendan. Unbelievable. Good job, Brendan. but thanks for coming on for real.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Guys, fantastic podcast. I'm glad we got together here.
Yeah. Hey, now one last thing for you guys to have a little homework to do.
Go ahead.
Eastern Kentucky played in their first playoff game in forever Saturday. I don't know if y'all watched any of it, but the Colonels traveled up to Villanova in the FCS playoffs. And the Colonels were winning for the better part of the game. There's a key play in the second half that they did review, and they still call the thing an incomplete pass. It was definitely not an incomplete pass. And it was a scoop and score for Eastern Kentucky that would have won the game. I'd be curious if you guys go back and look at that clip and see if you think it was a forward pass or if you think it was a fumble.
Okay.
Or am I just biased?
Okay. I'm pretty sure you're biased.
Well, there's that.
You're definitely biased, but I'll look it up and I'll let you know.
I had some kernels earlier. Yeah. Popcorn kernels.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad. Yeah. They also make good chicken.
Well, what about a fun question today?
You got anything? Pat, give us a fun history lesson. Go ahead.
Give it to us.
So I've got a I've got a history story I could share with you.
Give it to us, because Carson's got to finish his drink while you tell this story. Go ahead.
Okay. The U.S. Civil War, right? Back in the 1800s, mid-1800s.
Pat was there.
Mm-hmm.
So the couple of things. This is a really interesting one. The armies of the North and the South gathered in Virginia at Bull Run Creek, Manassas, Virginia, to have their first official battle.
With spectators.
And the spectators came down from D.C. because the North thought it was just going to wipe the planet off of all the rednecks coming up from the South. It didn't quite go that well for the North. In fact, they were running as fast as they can to get back to Washington after the trouncing that the South gave them there on the battlefield that day. But, you know, it was an interesting story that there was obviously an owner of the land that that battle was fought on, right? There was a man that actually owned the farm that they all just showed up on and started hacking at each other and doing their thing. And he had a family there, and he saw all this going down, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm not really excited about this proximity toward D.C. I think I'm going to go ahead and pack it up and move and get out of here, right? So he does. He moves his family. They go down to a little area called Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. And it was in his family room that Robert E. Lee surrendered to Ulysses S. Grant. So the war began in his front yard and ended in his living room.
Yep, that's a good story.
That is a good one.
That's my story. That's all I got. So, yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Pat, thank you, man.
Hey, you got
that was fantastic.
And the best beard at the table is Carson Jones.
Let's go.
I mean, you can't deny it. Take a look at what he's been able to do.
Come on.
It's fantastic.
Did you,
that's
did, still beginners.
Did you go overseas and get, like, the transplant?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
That's why Carson was out last week.
Yes. I did tell Whitney. I was like, what do you think about me just fermenting this? Just dyeing it black.
She's why
like,
would you want to make it black?
She was like, why would you want to make it black? I was like, I don't know. It's like it's got some. There's a couple gray. There's a couple red. There's a couple brown. There's a couple blonde.
Pat needs to do just for men, but the rest of us are looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just all gray. I'm just old.
So.
Till next time.
We appreciate you guys.
Love you guys.
Thank you.